ends now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country. How's everyone doing this week? I say that like it's a live show. How are you, Chris?
Sure, this week's been, it's been stressful, ka? People have been coming after me because apparently I'm part of ZANU-PF paid Twitter. So I don't even know what that means, because apparently I get paid to distract the nation with my tweets.
Oh, my only question to you is, are you paid in bond notes or US dollars?
Sure. If I was getting paid, I would make sure that Ndounga needs a marriage, and I'll come visit you on a holiday. But unfortunately not. And maybe there is a paid Twitter that I need to find, because I really need to supplement my income. So if somebody's listening and they know of this paid Twitter space, or someone's getting paid and they, you know, want me to, you know, help them out, I'm more than willing. I'll come out and do it. But what shocks me, though, is that these people, and I'm not going to mention their names because I don't want to give them relevance, they are very dictatorial. Like, they get upset about what I tweet on my own page. And the tweet had something to do with where do white people work. And I was generally curious, because every Monday or so, every afternoon, you see them chilling at cafes and all sorts of things. And I was just like, where do these white people go to work?
We didn't agree to make this a personal rant against Twitter activists. Yeah,
That's true. What are we talking about?
And you waylaid me. And you waylaid me today about that. But I mean, obviously, so I need to put that on record. But as everyone knows, look, as people come towards elections, the stakes are so high that things are getting personal now. And, you know, I think, you know, I hope that people can take something from our podcast, Kuti. You know, you can disagree with someone. You can but you can still have a conversation, because really the true enemy in this country is not you or me. It's not, you know, the institute or a party or individuals that within that party, at least on a base level, anyone on Twitter, really, besides maybe the good professor, for me personally, is not my enemy. But yeah, no, I think having conversations is more important than really being concerning, you know, majoring and minors, concerning about what someone is tweeting. And if you're really interested about, you know, keeping the country moving forward, dialogue is important. And yeah, on that note, I think this week we've got a few things. It's more a weekly roundup, because like I said, last week, Zimbabwe Mazwano. I mean, we've got the Chief Justice appointment, and what's going on there. And then we sort of go into, obviously, our favorite topic, factions, factionalism and fashion. I'm going to get in trouble for that, because we're talking about the Women's League.
Wow. But I must say, they actually, the Women's League, I enjoy them so much. They're always so passionate, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I think and we're then, also going to go into what's happening in Mazoe with Arnold Farm, I think it's called.
It's Arnold Farm, yeah.
Arnold Farm. And then, then maybe finish off with new taxes out for SMEs and that sort of thing.
With Chinanomics, something that's being coined in our household. Brand new term of economics, Chinanomics.
UBT is like to come up with these funny terms, huh?
But to the good news, Chief Justice Luke Malava.
Yeah, that's the new guy. Message came through yesterday, well, I suppose today, that he will be appointed the Chief Justice. He's currently out of the country, so when he returns is when he will be sworn in as the new Chief Justice. If you listen to one of our earlier episodes, we spoke about the candidates, we spoke about what was going on with the process, and he was one of four. The other three were Justice Rita Makarau, Justice Garwe, and High Court Judge Chiweshe
didn't go to the interviews, actually.
Yeah, he didn't.
It's you know, if you listen to that previous podcast where we actually spoke about it, a lot of the conjecture around there. In fact, I think our actual conclusions, because they had, if you recall, and for those that didn't and haven't listened to it, they had live televised interviews, you know, very open and transparent process. And even for the layperson, like my learned friend Christian Ambo, the outstanding candidate by far in terms of the interviews and just performance on paper was, you know, the CJ now, Justice Malaba. He was also the most senior, and also had put in work, just in his position and his role. So the appointment seems to be one based on merit, at least on face value.
Yeah, I mean, from what I know, and I think today I'll speak about my inside information a little bit. This was always going to be the call. When this whole issue around the amendment to the Constitution in terms of the appointing of the Chief Justice was going on, I spoke to some sources, and these sources told me that, look, the president is going to appoint Chief Justice, Justice Malaba, for the reason that he is the most senior. He's been acting in the position and he, you know, has the experience. He's also going to spend about 4 or 5 years, because I think he's 60 now. And the retiring age is 65, I believe. So he's not going to be in that seat for, or he's 65 and the retiring age is 70. So he's not going to be there for, you know, eons and eons.
A very long time. I think Justice Garo was the youngest in that lineup.
Yeah.
I remember us mentioning that.
So that's basically it. You know, the president looked at the candidates. He looked at the experience. He looked at who was most senior, and the most senior, and he was the deputy chief justice. So it makes sense, yeah, I suppose, for him to come to the seat.
I know you talk to your sources at the night time, but you know, I don't agree that it was such an obvious choice based on seniority.
I said for them.
If you see for them, but
yeah,
if you look at the appointment of the Reserve Bank governor, unless bankers work differently, it didn't seem as if the appointment of Mangudla was a result of seniority or a choice in the same way as
you'd rather have Kereke.
No, was it not? I would say Tluwayo. Mrs. Tluwayo was the most senior. She was deputy, and she actually acted in that position for almost half a year while they were waiting for a substantial appointment.
I'd have to check.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, when you do your Googles.
Yeah, I mean...
So you know, the way we are conditioned in the opposition, Kwedu said, no, is now we're going through Justice Malaba's judgments and saying, is this guy as good as we thought he was?
The thing is, let me say this. You, on the opposition side, you'll never be satisfied. But I think... And I think most people in the legal fraternity that I've spoken to, magistrates and lawyers today, have said that he is the best candidate for the job. And they seem quite pleased. They'd rather have him than any of the other candidates there. And now it's left to be seen what exactly will happen, because there is still the issue of this amendment to the bill, to the Constitution.
That's constitutional, yes.
And people,
constitutional amendment one.
And people have been saying this is a loss for Lacoste and for Vice President Mnangagwa, because he, as Justice Minister, has been pushing for this amendment. And you know, now it seems that the president has gone and appointed the person who everyone thought would not actually make it. So it really looks like a slap in the face there. However, the amendment can still go through and it could affect who gets appointed Deputy Chief Justice now that that role is vacant.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that might be what would happen, because one would then assume that if, you know, the Vice President, who's also the Justice Minister, is looking to the future, he might assume that he's going to then have the next appointing powers for the next Chief Justice, and you'd assume that you'd want his deputy in that situation to be someone he's already picked. But, you know, whether it's a win for a loss for Lacoste or win for G40, I certainly don't think it's a win for anyone. I think this is just how the puppeteer, the master of this stage play, the master of this farce, that is Zanu PF politics, runs the game. He takes away and he gives away, you know, like the proverbial, you know, king. And this was just, you know, slapping Lacoste on the fingers a little bit to make sure that they don't get too powerful. Maybe blowing some winds in the sail of the, you know, these guys that have been attacking the Herald and have had nothing good to drink whiskey out of their mugs from in a while. To mix metaphors.
It's going to be interesting to now see what comes before Justice Malaba's desk. Is that what you call it? A desk or bench? I don't know.
Bench, yes, yeah. A bench. Who comes in front of his bench?
We're definitely heading to an election year, and election years are always quite notorious for issues coming before the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court or whatever courts we have that, you know, of a very sensitive nature. And I can definitely see something to do with elections coming to the...
And very, 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 very soon.
Either the Constitutional Court or from the High Court very soon. And
I think you're right. I think we might see a voters' roll one coming very soon. I'm sure on the eve of elections, we might see another... set the date. We might see constitutional challenges to validity of results. There's going to be a lot of cases that are going to come before him. So how he performs in that is really going to guarantee what his legacy in this role. I think his legacy outside is set, unlike other candidates on that list.
But you see, the thing is, it's in this role that then that people will remember you by. I think. When you are now calling the shots, literally, it's how you react, especially the fact that 2018 is going to be a very sensitive time. How he reacts to that pressure, how he reacts to the situation, will definitely determine, I think, his legacy. But for now, I think he's a really good appointment, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, how the factionalism plays out. Within ZANU-PF, all sorts of issues that surround such roles, the politics of such roles, because they are not without politics. And now he is the Chief Justice, but he is also a political player. He is the head of one of the three arms of government. So it's definitely going to be quite interesting, and we'll definitely be talking about it as things come up and see how it goes.
Yeah. I feel like you just said he's the head of one of the three branches of government. I just wanted to say to the idiots that, you know, I don't know, I saw some nonsense about, you know, tribes and him being the first of a certain tribe being the head of a certain of the arm of government. And look, I mean, it's relevant, I suppose, for us to discuss it to certain people. But I think the more we discuss it, the more we give it power. And for me personally, that's not the first thing I thought about when I heard Justice Malaba was appointed. In fact, it's until someone pointed out to me that he's the first to be appointed head of a branch of government and not to be a deputy. I had never thought of it. And I hope that at least our generation or a lot of people will feel the same way, because I really can't stand that nonsense. I don't know if it's just me, but, and I hope, you know, some of our listeners feel the same way, is that I don't feel that it's anything to do with the post at all. But maybe, you know, as Liso said when he was here, it's a lot realer and a lot more solid and politically prudent or politically necessary than actually we give it credit for.
Yeah, I don't think that him being appointed or not appointed had any tribal connotations to it. I think it was just simply that he was the best candidate for the job. In the interviews, he performed the best. He was the most senior. He's acted in the role. And, you know, he was deserving. I don't get a sense that there was any tribal aspects to prevent it, though people have, you know, proffered these things. And I think it's just people trying to spur that up. But I really just think that, you know, this is the guy who's been appointed. And now it is like the same way that he was appointed on the merit of, you know, on merit, his performance will be judged on merit rather than anything else.
I just had a really nefarious and terrible thought. And we're getting into the issues with the women leagues now. But before, as a speculative thought, what if they use this appointment as an excuse to remove the Unity Accords position for someone from ZAPU in the presidium?
I don't think that can. Well, I don't know. But I don't.
Crazier things have happened.
That's true, but I don't see why, you know. But like you said, crazier things have happened. But I really don't see that happening. But, you know, it could be because, they, as you said, there's factional politics within the women's league that have creeped in. And one of the things is this appointment of the vice president. So for those who are not up to speed, members of the Women's League from last week were demonstrating against Eunice Sandimoyo and Sarah Mahoka. And Eunice Sandimoyo, I believe, is the provincial minister for Bulawayo.
Is Sarah Mahoka the one that was so rotund that she couldn't walk for a while?
I think so. I'm not sure. I'll have to check.
That she was going to rallies in wheelchairs because, you know, she has a penchant for donuts and...
I don't know. I'll have to check. But I do know that Sarah Mahoka was the one who called out VP Mnangagwa at a rally at ZANPF headquarters for factionalism, and she called out the president's spokesperson, George Charamba, after he had made comments to Professor Moyo, and she asked whether whether Comrade Charamba spoke on behalf of the president or not, and she said if Vice President Mnangagwa was leading a faction, then, you know, he should come out and say so, and all sorts of stuff. So now there's been demonstrations.
So she's no friend of yours then?
She's a very good friend. We meet very often. So the Women's League demonstrated against them last week, and it's crept into the weekend. Yesterday, which was Tuesday, the 28th, the Women's League held a meeting at ZANPF headquarters. Their secretary was there, their chairperson, the first lady, Grace Mugabe, she was there. They had this meeting, and sources from the meeting tell us that it has now been resolved that Eunice Sandimoyo and Sarah Mahoka will be kicked out of the Women's League, but it will first go through the proper disciplinary channels and processes.
On what basis, or do we have to wait until they actually prefer charges against them? Like, why are they being kicked out?
So, it seems that this is...
I want the official reason and then the real reason.
So, the official reason hasn't been given yet. Yesterday, at the press conference after their meeting, they said that they are still going through the disciplinary measures according to their procedures according to their constitution, and once they've gone through that, they shall offer us more information on what exactly it is they're being charged with, and that sort of thing. So there isn't an official reason yet as to what is actually going on and why they are being disciplined. The unofficial reason that I've been privy to is that on the case of Sarah Mahoka, apparently she has challenged the First Lady in meetings of the ZANU-PF Women's League, and this has not gone down well in their situations, and so she is seen as insubordinate. And so the crime of being insubordinate will lead you to be kicked out. This is unofficial. It's just rumors that I have heard.
So is she a monarch or a prefect, or where insubordination in closed door meetings is a crime?
You see, I really don't know. I suppose this is what Sarah Mahoka, you know, asked, and where her insubordination was, you know, but these are meetings for us to discuss, and whatever, you know, comes out of the discussions comes out of the discussions. Whichever position we then take, or whatever it is. So this is my understanding. I'm not sure how truthful these rumors are. It's rumors that people have been talking about. With Eunice Sandimoyo, carry on.
Yeah, I was saying go on. I was about to say that I trust your sources.
with Eunice Sandimoyo, it seems to be a factional issue. So the Women's League has been pushing for a female vice president candidate. And currently we have Vice President Mpoko and Vice President Mnangagwa as our two vice presidents. So it's one of those situations where they now have been pushing for this candidate, and it seems Eunice Sandimoyo has come up, I think, as one of the candidates, whether she was mobilizing to put herself as a candidate for vice president, and creating parallel structures. These are some of the rumors that, you know, have been coming up. And what that does is that it means that ZANU-PF will now have a female vice president candidate if she were to be, you know, selected. And also they would have a Ndebele vice president candidate. So Vice President Mpoko would then...
In one person.
So Vice President Mpoko would then be out, and you'd remain with Vice President Mnangagwa and Eunice Sandimoyo as the two individuals.
But surely Amai wants to be president.
this is again the rumors that First Lady wants to be president, and so as the Women's League are pushing for a vice president candidate, her name will be put forward. And so if now Eunice Sandimoyo is creating parallel structures and she wants to be the candidate, it stops the First Lady's plans to get there, and it works against the G40 faction or whatever it may be. So Minister Kasukwere last week said that this was, with what's going on in the Women's League, is a Women's League issue. They are cleaning in-house, they are sorting out their issues. And he said as PC, he's not getting involved. However, it seems that somebody is playing the politics and has now roped in the likes of Kasukwere into this whole debacle, and said that, no, they're stopping the Women's League. They tried to stop the Women's League from their processes and things like that. And it's believed, you know, Lacoste is spinning on its side, playing the politics. And whatever comes out of this can be seen as a loss for G40. Because if Ifana Sarah Mahoka, who have been used to call out the vice president before, are then kicked out of the Women's League, that tool is no longer there. And, you know, it's just a whole, quite a kerfuffle right now, We'll definitely see how it progresses and what happens. But, you know, factional politics is rife right now in ZANU-PF. And if somebody could take advantage of it, you could do quite some damage, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm so confused because on one hand, you know, it seems as if, you know, Grace was very much the mother figure of G40. You know, if it seems as Grace was the one heading up G40, as it were. At the same time, right now, it seems as if she, you know, her machinations might even work, you know, to the advantage of Lacoste. But anyway, maybe I'm just confused, but you gave us how it almost is if there's G40, there's Lacoste, and then there's, you know, for lack of a better metaphor, the queen on a chessboard who just goes where she wants, and with the same amount of power. And, you know, I guess those really point, this story is obviously developing, and I'm sure by the end of the year, or by June, July, August, there, when things really start heating up, with, you know, less than 12 months to go until the next election, that's where some of these things will come into fruition, and we'll actually see. But, you know, maybe if she's privy to something in her household that we might not know, she might want to move the timeline up so that she can be acting president when someone makes his, you know, scheduled, weekly visits to, you know, the clinic in Singapore.
Someone told me, yesterday, I think it was, that we might just have a Congress, an elective Congress, a special elective Congress at the end of the year instead of a ZANU-PF conference. I don't know how true this is. It's just someone speculating their own, you know, thoughts based on what's already started to happen at the start of this year. So I think within ZANU-PF, we are likely to see some changes before we get to the end of the year. And as you said, it's a developing story. Depending on what happens, depending on how they do their business, it could be very critical to what happens in the election next year. So we'll definitely still be watching and talking, and, you know,
In my opinion, any significant change to the presidium of ZANU-PF at this point would actually be disastrous for them coming in the next election. I think of course, Mpoko is, you know, Mpoko reminds me of, and I don't know why I'm saying this, but for any of those guys that have watched Star Wars, I don't know if you know Jabba the Hutt.
Wow. I'm not even going to allow you to take it any further. That is the vice president of this country, and he deserves an iota of respect. However,
I mean, Jabba the Hutt was quite well respected. I mean, he owned businesses and supermarkets.
Wow. Anyway,
about unpleasant characters.
Unpleasant characters. Now that you are some 6,000 kilometers away or whatever it is, you just feel like saying whatever it is you want, huh?
This one I was always going to say, because, you know, what's happening at Arnold Farm in Mazoe, is, first of all, it's extra illegal. It's illegal. You know, Justice Felicitas Chatukuta last week, you know, granted an interdict against, you know, the police and Grace herself from evicting these people. This was last week on Friday. Nevertheless, you know, Dr. Mai decided that it's still in her best interest to continue using state resources, ZRP, and people to continue evicting people.
I think
on this farm.
You need to start at the beginning for those who might not be aware that
Yeah.
The first lady, allegedly, because I think it's before the courts, we'll say allegedly, is evicting people in on Arnold Farm in Mazoe because she wants to expand her farm or her businesses in in the area. So there's a lot of villagers and people who live and work on that farm who have been evicted. And as you said, Judge or Justice Chatukuta gave an interdict to stop it from happening, but there are still people being, you know, evicted from that farm. And I don't think that's the way. I don't think that is right. I think it's completely outrageous and quite scandalous, actually, to remove people from their homes, essentially. It's not just where they work, from their livelihoods and homes, to just because you want to expand, you know, your own empire. It's quite, it reminds me of it's feudalistic, actually. That's the word I was looking for. You know, it is,
but you know, from a historical and a history perspective, you know, even the feudal lords had enough sense to relocate people as opposed to eviction without relocation. I mean, it's unpleasant and it's ridiculous, but with the amount of holdings that they have in Mazowe, I'm sure if they really wanted that particular patch of land, if it was really that important for this woman to take that particular patch of land, she could have made, you know, inroads or made ideas to move them, to resettle them and move them gradually. Because this Arnold Farm thing is from 2014, actually. I was just looking it up. It's not a new story. She hasn't started just allegedly, as you'd like to say, to cover your and your employers. But it's not a new story. She could have resettled people. There's so many other options, but it seems to betray, you know, the level of predatory, neo-patrimonialism that we sort of live in.
Someone needs to go out there. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't quite read up on it. Someone I think should go out there and actually cover, you know, extensively.
The only people who could get access is you guys. And by you, I mean your daytime employee, because I'm sure it's locked down by now.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's people. So the people who've been evicted, where have they gone? And what is so special about Arnold Farm? Like, what's there? It must not just be farmland. Like, there must be.
Yeah, no, maybe.
You see, because I don't. If this has been ongoing since 2014, and you know she's very adamant about it. Like, what's there? What's made it so special? This is what's the, you know, the sort of information that I'd be interested in finding out is why. Why they specifically? Why is it going to these processes? Why is it, you know, why is it just to just have more land? Is there gold there? Are there diamonds there? Like, what's there? Is it just tobacco that you'll be growing or oranges? I don't know what else, you know, like.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd sort of be interested in finding out is, you know, the why.
It's another developing story. It's in the news right now. I know, you know, Fortune Chassi, Honorable Fortune Chassi, who's a ZANU PF MP in the area, has actually had a number of run-ins with Grace and her taking land to the point that she has publicly reprimanded him. I think he was cowed by that. He used to be quite outspoken in terms of that. But, you know, if he's listening, if anyone knows him, he's a dancehall artist as well, if you didn't know.
He is. Maybe we'll reach out to him and see if he'll be willing to come into the studio.
Mean, he probably wouldn't. He'd probably be, yeah, you'd probably give us a party line, but it's a perfect example of where, you know, the ruling party could redeem himself if he actually stood up for his constituents over this this woman. It might be something that you could then point at and say this party is redeemable, but at the moment I mean no.
But it would have to go through the party for him to do that, because she is the chairperson of the Women's League and she is a Politburo member. So
No. You represent your constituents in parliament.
Oh, in parliament.
You can stand up.
I see what you mean.
You can stand up. Advocate Fortune Chesu could stand up and ask Minister Douglas Mumboshora, who's Minister of Lands and Rural Lands and Resettlement, or ask Minister Minochi Wuri about why the police
You mean Police Commissioner Chiuri, not Minister Chiuri?
Chombo at Home Affairs, who's Chiuri's boss, asked why these people are being evicted at Arnold Farm. And of course, it will do nothing because the ministers probably won't even be there knowing the absenteeism. But it's something, it's enough to show that you're actually representing what's the interest of your constituents. And that doesn't need party approval.
That's
because
true,
you're an MP and you're there to talking about absentee ministers, our finance minister has been absent from the job.
What do you mean he's been absent? What are you talking about?
I mean,
they've just joined Twitter. The finance ministry is now on Twitter. They're reaching out to the general public.
For your sake, because I was going to say the body is there.
You see, now you're saying for my sake, and then you're going to say I was going to say, and then you go and end up saying it.
Well, don't call me out. Anyway, look, what's happened is they've decided in the Gazette. I didn't actually get the date of the Gazette. But at the beginning of this week, it's been reported that they've decided to impose taxes on the semi-formal, I suppose, small, medium enterprises. $10 a tax, $10 a chair at hair salons, $10 per centum for cross-border traders. So from what they make, I suppose, between $45 and $70 for combis, depending on how many seats they've got in their combis, and transport operators, basically people with a T35 and above, between $200 and $500 a month for transporters. And, I'm not an economic expert by any far. In fact, the last time I did economics was in Form 6 when I was here for high school. But if your economy is in a recession and you have a situation where people are not spending money, and a situation where your tax income is low because of lack of economic activity, your solution is not to try and increase your tax base by taxing people more. Your solution is to try and find ways to stimulate the economy, or in a situation like this to fix the fundamentals. So, and then all it's going to do is it's going to make your haircut more expensive, because now your barber has $10 extra that he's going to have to pay, or ladies, your weaves, your dreads, your braids, or even guys. I know some of my friends like that kind of thing. It's going to make everything more expensive, which means there'll be less money to spend, less money to pay taxes with. So I don't understand, how this is justifiable in a situation, and it's obviously the fault that he's looking for revenue from any way he can, so he can pay these bonuses and do that. But it's such an ill-advised policy, at least in my humble opinion, with only a Form 6 in economics. I mean, if anyone else, a true economist, could tell us what the logic behind it is.
Yeah, I also stopped at economics at Form 6. Maybe you should go back to school, because it looks very handy right now for us to understand what exactly is happening in this economy. But as you said, it's
I think to understand what's happening in this economy, you would have to go to Sangoma School with a younger.
But it's we have a rent-seeking government. That's the bottom line, is that they are rent-seeking, and they will rent-seek from wherever they believe, there is money. We have a large informal sector, and now they are going to tax, people in the informal sector. As you said, it's going to only make things worse, because price of a haircut's going to go up, price of this is going to go up, and it's the things at the bottom which really shouldn't be be but moving. Price of transport is going to go up, and once the price of transport goes up, this public transport,
everything,
it's going to, you see, it's going to affect, it's just going to have a ripple effect, and it's in an economy where people don't have money. They just don't have money. People aren't earning money. Country isn't earning money. So you're just, you know, taking money just from wherever you want to take it. You're just taking money, and it's not going to go very far, and it's going to make, I think, the situation worse for a lot of people. They really need to look at this policy, and I hope it's one of the policies that actually gets overturned, like the VAT on meat and was it margarine,
but, you know,
or whatever
people,
it is.
I hope, but I think it's a reaction, because they couldn't tax meat and margarine, so they decided, come, let's go and tax people. And, you know, Chris, like, think about the actual practical of how it's going to work. You're going to have Zimra officials going from a growth point, going to Pamashop Spedu. You know, I think about Pamashop Spedu, where I get my haircut, Pamel Brain, close to my mom's house. Pamashop Pamel Brain, there's at least 5 salons. You're going to have Zimra officials coming in week, month by month, to collect taxes on these young ladies and young gentlemen who cut hair and who do that, because obviously the salon owner is not going to want to pay those taxes. You're going to have many more Zimra roadblocks so that they can catch more combis to see if they've paid their taxes, because I'm obviously they're going to give them receipts for the month. You're going to, like, it's going to just, it'll turn into a more oppressive environment because of just how are you going to collect taxes on a chair in the salon without having someone physically going in there to see how many chairs are in that salon. Because obviously, like, you know what I mean?
No, I hear you. I think it's quite, you know, it's quite ridiculous. And more to the ridiculousness, there was the one that came out today, is that there are new traffic fines as well that are now in force. So level 1 offense, ooh, which was $5, is now 10. Level 2, which is 10, which was $10, now 15. And level 3, which was $20, has been raised to $30 per offense. So, yeah, we're just in situations where people are just going to be paying more, or the government is just really rent-seeking and trying to get every last dollar out of people. You know, level 1 offenses are this, such as not fastening your seatbelt, or a cyclist not using, you know, the cycle track. Level 2 is displaying registration numbers or failing to license a vehicle, that sort of thing. Pretty much
so,
anything they've been stopping.
I know you
want to
pay $10 for fine. You know,
I don't have money for fines. And I don't know.
And if I hope it doesn't happen, but if what was a 5 rand or 50 cents route is now a dollar, you might find it's better with a $10 yako muka 3-2-3 kako drive.
But the thing is, why is that $10 mu 3-2-3 mako? You're probably going to have to pay, you know, $10 for not having a honeycombed reflector, even though you have a reflector, or $10 for driving with slippers and not with closed shoes, or, you know, something ridiculous.
You know, and then, yeah, so it's you said it's rent seeking, and that's obviously the correct term for it, but for me, it's barbarism, it's barbaric, and it seems like, you know, smash and grab, like the kicks of a dang was, Papa Bri had a Bri there. If you guys have ever seen a Bri, and people are hungry, and you know, the plate is going around, but it's now about to finish, and there's always that Kule who decides to take a handful because Aufungo Nyama ino pera. And that's basically what I see, you know, Chinomics. Not to be confused with Sino economics, which is very good for an economy, as we've seen in China.
Yeah, no, it's something's got to give. At some point, something's just got to give. I don't know what, but we really need a break in our economy. And we need, actually what needs to happen is a change of policies. And these are not the changes in terms of policy that we're expecting or that need to happen. We need changes, as we always talk about, ease of doing business. You know, even simply for the Zimbabwean businessmen, there's so many hindrances before we even talk about foreign investment, just local investors themselves. So hopefully somebody sees this and they're forced into making a decision that makes it better for all of us. But we'll see how things go.
Yeah. I think that's a grim and sad note to end the weekly wrap up or this quick brief you know, look at what's going on. You know, but from where I stand, I think there's also a lot of good that's coming out of Zim, a lot of positive stories that I always see. And you know, being where I am right now, I'm not saying because you send C10s after me. No, I'm joking. I'm far away, so you end up spending a lot of time on social media and actually immersing yourself in online Zim culture and having conversations with people that you'd never usually have conversations with. And there's a lot of positivity. A lot of positivity, even though some people drink tea and swear, but there's a lot of positivity coming out. So, as Janagas, even if we have to go into, never mind. But yeah.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's very early morning where you are, Saka. We will just have to...
Yeah, it's 4:45 in the morning, guys.
Yeah, I think you might just have to, you know, catch a couple of hours of sleep. Usatwa watanga kutaura, zisinga taura. Because as you said, you are there, but I am still here.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to be having, you know, a few people coming on. I hope everyone who's listens or who wants to be on the WhatsApp group, it's not a crazy WhatsApp group. We generally post the shows up and post WhatsApp links, downloadable links to the show on the WhatsApp group. So everyone should join. I think the link is on our Twitter and on our Facebook. And yeah, thank you for listening to Politics and Beyond.
Yep, on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba. You can catch me at Chris Charamba on all social media.
And I'm Tawanda Henry BT. You can catch me, Henry BT, on all social media now. Thanks, guys.
Cheers. And now. Capital 263.